Page 40, Today's Blind Child in School by Winifred Downing. Joshua signifies by a hand movement that he prefers the blue sheet of paper. Jennifer shows by a vocal sound that she chooses pink. Judy uses an eye movement to select green. And Fred gets red by pressing a button on a chest strap. These are four of the seven children Ellie Lee, a member of CCB's San Francisco chapter, works with in an ordinary public school. All have a visual impairment of some kind, but are also developmentally delayed. Some lack the ability to speak, others have limited motor capabilities, and still others suffer from paralysis in various parts of the body. To complete this task, making Valentines, they use these same communications techniques to select the picture, the written words, as well as tools such as scissors and glue. Ellie spends 2 days each week with these students while also working in the regular classrooms of a boy and girl whose only disability is blindness. She is dual-credentialed as a teacher of the visually impaired and also in orientation and mobility. I am an adult blind person who learned Braille in the Chicago public schools in the 1930s and 40s, but realize as I follow Ellie's teaching experiences how vastly different is the task of urban instructors today compared with mine. When in 1976, Congress passed PL 94-142, establishing that every child must receive an education in the ordinary public school in an age-appropriate classroom in the least restrictive environment, everyone associated with the education of students with disabilities was overjoyed. The unintended consequences of this measure, however, have sadly diluted the instruction given to blind students. Page 41. For most of her 23-year career, Ellie has worked as an itinerant teacher, now circulating among 14 schools. Of her 22 students this year, 3 are learning Braille, 1 preschool and 2 in the second grade. In the case of the second grader, she visits each 2 to 3 times a week, using a 2-hour parking permit, purchased herself since the Board of Education refuses that assistance, accessing her supply closet. Her car, she loads her hand truck with a Braille writer, SAL, a speech and learning tool, the acronym SAL, computer, Braille worksheets, and a variety of manipulatives and games to reinforce the Braille lesson. Once in the school building, she may be given space in the library, a conference room, the teacher's lunchroom, hallway, closet, or she may even move from one place to another during the hour of instruction. Often the chairs and tables wobble and she wedges books or folded paper under to stabilize them. Sometimes she must even search for the table and chair. She creates her own Braille worksheets because she can't always visit the storage facility for her students' materials during the school day. For the preschool student, the situation is complicated by the fact that no appropriate program exists. There are many classes for preschool children who are developmentally delayed, but nothing for visually impaired students. Ellie is teaching her preschooler Braille at home, but the parents have requested that she meet them at a public library where the tables are so high the little girl cannot get her arms up high enough to handle the Braille readiness materials. Ellie brings a blanket so they can work on the floor. The activities include squeezing balloons, some filled with flour and some with lotion, to strengthen the students' hands, and finding small objects like coins in a large box containing buttons, beads, and keys, which the child sorts to promote manual skills. Page 42. In urban settings, families frequently have just one parent who works several jobs, use English as a second language, and possess little knowledge of their children's education. Only one of the Braille students, one of the 2 second graders Ellie teaches, has the luxury of concerned parents who understand the importance of Braille. After school, this student teaches his sister and parents what he has learned. His sister actually composed a Braille thank you letter to Ellie. In her 20-plus years of teaching, Ellie rarely has had students fully capable of learning all that Braille has to offer. To children with additional handicaps, she has taught the functional use of Braille. For example, she was assigned a teenage student who was hearing impaired, blind, and developmentally delayed. Though the student's previous teacher said he was unable to learn, Ellie developed a tactile communication board and labeled a classroom with functional objects having Braille that correlated to the specific activity at that location. She let him feel the object and the Braille label and taught him to walk independently to the place the Braille symbolized. At the end of the school year, he was able to read the Braille on his cassettes to choose his favorite music. He wasn't reading exact words, but feeling the overall impression of the label. Page 43. As in this instance, Ellie has custom-designed curricula for each youngster's age and nature of the disability. The work requires heroic patience and creativity. Despite the difficulties of the teaching and learning environment, Ellie's work gives students a basic understanding of Braille that will be useful as his or her education progresses. Some students continue to use large print and magnification, even when their vision loss and the material to be covered signify that they should rely more on Braille. For parents, the desire to stay in the sighted world is understandable, but may create a psychological barrier to learning Braille. This barrier is less likely in Ellie's students because of the early foundation she provides. It will also produce students who learn more advanced Braille later in their academic lives. As competitors for the Braille Challenge, a contest often mentioned in the BC, I know of no students who come from school systems in large cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, or San Francisco. Rather, they arrive from school systems in suburbs and small towns where property taxes produce more money for education and where the number and diversity of disadvantaged children create less strain on the schools. A better remedy for the problems for students and teachers like Ellie must be found.